So, if we come back to the fire music period, is there one event, something happened that, for in your mind, would synthesize this whole chapter?
For fire music?
Yeah. Come back to the last 2 years, basically.
I don't know, it happened so fast.
Is there a peak or something that...
I don't know if it's a peak, but, I mean, one of the songs was a theme song to the WWE Royal Rumble.
Which was one of your to-do lists?
Yeah, like, I mean, we had a theme song for a WWE pay-per-view in 06 with our song Baby Hates Me for, I forget the name of the pay-per-view, but it wasn't as big as Royal Rumble. Royal Rumble was huge. So it was really cool to hear the song played, you know, going to commercial, bumpers, when it introduces stuff. So that was nice.
Just a word about that. Wrestling is not that big in Europe, in France. You have a little core of fans that the general public doesn't get at all.
Yeah.
You mentioned it's important, it's a peak. For you, because you're a fan of wrestling, for the band in general, because it's a way for you to touch a very large audience, so on the business side also, when you say important, in which both aspects?
I don't think it's important. It wasn't important. It was just really cool to have had happen right when the album was getting released. And it was cool in the sense that, you know, I was a big fan of wrestling, and here we are at the theme song to, you know, one of the two biggest wrestling events of the year. I don't pay attention to wrestling anymore, but I still am aware of some of the wrestlers that were involved with the Royal Rumble, so I thought it was pretty cool from that standpoint. And then, I don't know, we just toured, had some great tours with Judah, Deadlord, 77, Admiral Sir Cloudesley Shovel. We had some great tours, so good festival shows and stuff. So really, it's just album tour. Within that, there's some cool moments, but I mean, they're just, I don't know how monumental they are in the big scheme of things, but so the Royal Rumble thing was a pretty big one.
The next step is to play at the next Super Bowl, or
reach
an even bigger audience?
We're not that big. Royal Rumble was pretty big for us, but I don't think we were that big, no.
Alright. So the new album is the Wildcat, is the eighth one if you don't take mini albums into account?
Yeah.
I suppose I might be wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. I suppose when you start a new chapter, you kind of have think, what is the artistic direction I want to go, or we want to go, or you just let the music talk.
Yeah.
And because in the same time, you can say, how do I bring some new sound, but keeping our identity or our core trademark? How do you find the balance?
There's no balance. We just write a bunch of new rock tunes. I mean, you know, in writing the record, there's obviously those moments where we jam stuff out and it ends up sounding like, whoa, way far away than people know us. You know, we have a song that sounds like this. Those never make the record. Well, I mean, we can write a song like this or like that or over there, but they never make the record. What ends up happening...
Why? Because you think it's not part of it, or the world Danko Jones is, or because it's... Out of the frame? Why?
Both. It's not good enough.
It's not good enough.
It doesn't.
Right.
We work within a box. It's hard rock, and we're not going to write an experimental jazz record. We're not going to write an indie rock record. Although we can.
As an artist, you would not like to go sometimes out of the box, surprise the audience, or one way or the other.
No, I mean, that's the problem that I feel a lot of people have when it comes to art and artists and musicians trying to be artists and all this stuff, is this constant need to work out of a box. And it's using words like maturing and progression and change and
cliche,
limitless, you know, I find that there's no art in that. There's no art in having the entire, every single sound at your fingertips.
Yeah, but you know how it works. Also, as an artist and also as a music fan, there's a new Iron Maiden, so you expect to hear Iron Maiden songs, and so some fans will will say, yeah, it's still the same thing. And if you try to do something else, they say, yeah, it's not the Iron Maiden sound, so I don't like it anymore. So you're kind of trapped between the habanero.
But that's just it. No matter what you do, people are going to think what they think. And for us, people say, oh, it sounds like every single record they put out. But that's a tradition that, you know, AC/DC, the Ramones, Slayer, and Motorhead followed. Every album was very similar to the last one. But if you were a Motorhead fan, or if you're an AC/DC fan, and you really, really ate up every album, you can hear the differences in every record. Mm-hmm. Because the only way to do the exact same record is to record them all at once, within the same period of time, the same studio, the same session, and then release them piece by piece. Then they will be very similar to each other. But there's just no way in hell you can duplicate album to album. And within that, we play with different influences on every album. Like this album, we brought in more of a Van Halen influence. But that isn't working outside of the box. That's working definitely within the confines that we have erected ourselves. The problem I find with bands and people who call themselves musicians and the idiots who call themselves artists is this constant need to work outside of this box, the constant need to have to change stuff and to be able to access all kinds of new this and new that, and expansion and progression and maturing. These kinds of catchphrases don't necessarily mean that there's any process of art involved in that. I find it more artistically, if you really want to get down to it, more artistically satisfying to work within a box and try to make the same three chords fresh again and new again, and take the same lyrical matter and put a twist on it, or talk about it from a different point of view or a different angle or a different way of saying the same thing for the 100th time. There's something that to me is very challenging. And I don't find being able to access every sound and to try something new very challenging. It's just you're doing something new just almost for the sake of just being different.
So you consider your work for the eighth album you recorded as a variation of the same spec? You got the same specification? You said at the beginning, that's our frame, and that's the eighth variation, and it will continue,
yeah,
of this. The rules we decided to follow.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're a rock band.
So you won't add, I don't know, keyboards or those stuff? Or
we could add keyboards, but it would always be within a rock, hard rock frame. I mean, there's just no way in hell that... I think the people who do that just haven't found themselves. They don't know what they are. And we, from almost day one, we knew we just wanted to play rock music. Whether that's garage rock, due to the fact that we didn't know what we were doing, or now hard rock. Very confident with our songwriting, very confident with our chops, confident with ourselves in the studio, knowing what sounds are going to be good on a record. So it comes with experience, but it's also like we're going to continue working within this framework because we know who we are. It's the bands that like, oh yeah, we just wanted to get away from that. Like, that's because you don't know who you are. You haven't heard enough music. I've heard enough music in my life to know what I don't want to sound like and what I want to sound like. And it's not like I'm this guy who formed this band and then, fuck, man, have you heard this band, Tangerine Dream? Jesus Christ, let's just make the next record like keyboards. Well, sorry, dude, but like we've heard all that music before we started this band, and then we started this band. So we knew where we wanted to go, and we knew what we wanted to play with when we started the band.
Yeah.
And all
and
these
no
bands,
frustration whatsoever.
No, man. The frustration lies in my lack of guitar chops, where I just can't pull off solos like Eddie Van Halen. But that's either near nor here nor there, because
it's more on technical point of view.
Yeah, like, but I mean, big picture, I'm very satisfied with the albums we do. Very satisfied. Like, I have no inclination to wish, like, oh, I wish we put a ballad in there, or I wish we sound more indie rock, or, you know, I wish we sound more heavy metal. Like, no, like, we're playing hard rock music. I also feel that hard rock music isn't a really recognized genre of music anymore. Heavy metal, another heavy form of music. It's so structured. It's so has such an infrastructure. It's its own universe. Everything from Metallica to Mayhem, they exist in that world. Whereas rock music is a fractured form of music. There isn't like a galvanizing scene, you know, where these guys sound like this, and then there's this kind of rock and roll, and then there's this and this rock. We're all islands unto ourselves, trying to find each other. And I always wish that there was more of an organized scene, the way I see heavy metal, because it's also a heavy form of music. Mm-hmm. The way indie rock is. Indie rock has a, you know, there's a network of labels, a network of scenes and bands, and platforms like Pitchfork and Quietus that really kind of are able to showcase these bands the same way that there's Blabbermouth and Kerrang and Terrorizer or whatever you want to say. So there's nothing like that for rock and roll. There's Classic Rock magazine, and there's like band, rock and roll bands here and there that get put on festivals, but there's no real galvanizing scene that I feel is lacking in rock and roll. So we try to do our part. You know, we take out bands like Audrey Horn, 77, Dead Lord, kind of package these rock things, you know, Biters, Admirals for Gladsley, Shovel. We try and package this stuff to kind of give it some sense or some kind of image of a unified scene. But really, there isn't, which I wish there was, you know, and it's just because rock and roll isn't popular enough.
It's popular, it's so spread, but in the wrong way. So you put any, you can take any kind of genre, and then you add rock, and you have the feeling, even if it's wrong, that it's part of the rock scene.
Exactly, it's been so misinterpreted. Yeah. I mean, modern rock, radio rock, these bands like Puddle of Mud, they're a rock band.
But I mean, also it's also a marketing stamp. I mean, you want to say that's a new band called, and you invent a new genre, industrial, whatever, Polish stuff, rock. And you're the only one in this frame, so you can say I'm the king of this genre. We're the only one, so it makes no sense.
But right. I mean, rock is an overused term. Hmm? It's been abused to the point where it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Everything that is not pop or classic is supposed to be rock.
Exactly. One way or the other. And my whole point is, well, I know what rock sounds like. I know what hard rock sounds like. You know, it sounds like Love Gun. You know, and wish there was more people who thought like that and less people who abuse that term or the word or the genre. I just wish that rock is like, it's used in so many ways that doesn't have anything to do with music. Rock on, man! Or like, let's rock! Meaning, let's have fun. So it doesn't mean anything. But to me, basing my whole life around it, it does mean something.
Even rock and roll.
Yeah, let's rock and roll, dude. Hey, like the character in the movie about to jump out of the plane goes, let's rock and roll. Like, you've seen it so many times, and it doesn't mean anything anymore. So, yeah, it's very frustrating, because I've fucking gambled my whole life on that fucking, those three words, you know? So, I wish there was more of a unified scene for the benefit of my career as well, because it's so easy for a 14-year-old kid who's trying to find themselves or trying to fit in to become an In Flames fan. Everything's there. You've got all the tools in order to find out where you know the bands that preceded them, the bands that were influenced them. These are the bands that they tour with. This is this whole scene. You just got to wear the right t-shirt and the right pair of jeans and bam! You're right in there. But with rock and roll, it's like, well, what is that? Is that Keanu Reeves jumping out of an airplane when he says rock and roll? Is it me when I fucking say I got a rock in a video? Or is it Puddle of Mud when they use the word rock? Or when the DJ at the modern rock station says, rock on, get... Like, it just doesn't mean anything. So, yeah, I wish it did. More so than... But I think... Then I say to myself, well, let it be that way. Let rock and roll fade into the background. Let you know, look, AC/DC and Rolling Stones, they became huge arena bands when there was nothing else to do. There was no internet to distract you. There were no Xbox and PS4 games to distract you and keep you home. Like, you can play, you can fucking kill aliens with your friend down the street on a why would you want to go out and watch fucking Stairway to Heaven, right? So Stairway to Heaven and Led Zeppelin had no competition. There's extreme sports, there's this, there's that, there's so many things for people to do now. Why the fuck rock and roll is at the bottom of the totem pole? So I say let it be that way. There's gonna be no successors to Rolling Stones or Motorhead or Metallica or the Foo Fighters. Let it be that way. There might be the odd band. Volbeat seemed to be the one that's going to take everyone's place. But there's not going to be an array of bands. Let it fade into the underground.
Yeah, but as you mentioned, the rock idols kind of disappear little by little because they're getting old, and so the band is banned or cannot continue. In 20 years' time, will there be a new band that will take the lead? Or
no, there's going to be bands.
There will be like a... I would say a swamp of bands with the same level and no one getting higher than the others.
Right. It's going to be like jazz is now. Jazz is jazz. And jazz is an old-timey form of music that still has a huge audience, but it's just not at the same level it used to be. And it's not at the same level as EDM. So that's what rock and roll is going to be. It's going to always be there. There's always going to be kids getting into the Stooges and getting into the Beatles and getting into Led Zeppelin. Always, always, always. But they're never going to be as big as the Zeppelin was, just because Zeppelin was lucky enough to be at a time when there wasn't as much distractions, and it's much competition for everybody's dollar, everybody's ear. And so that's fine. Let it fade into the background. Let it go down, sink into the underground, and let it be the music that it was meant to be, which is a rebellious form, a dangerous form of music, not meant for everybody. And give it the aura of danger that it used to have. And I'm fine. When I look at it that way, I go, well, that's fine, man. That's great. Let mainstream media, pop culture, abuse the term. Abuse it till nobody even wants to say it anymore. And let us just take it again. So that's fine.
Let's the rock go underground, I would say.
Absolutely. Let rock and roll become underground again.
All right. You seem to keep the pace of releasing a new album each 2 years. Is that kind of, artistically speaking, the natural rhythm of the band? Or you could do faster, or because you need to write, to record, to release, to tour, and then rest a little, and then boom, 2 years, and so you start again the whole process?
I can answer that question a number of ways. I could say that we have definitely the ability to write 4 albums a year. Just, it can be done. But we just never leave the studio. Just, we can churn out.
I don't know, in your mobile phone right now, you have like hundreds of riffs or ideas or...
I got about 50.
Sure. So you always have the songs in advance?
Well,
you finish Wildcat, you have already 10 songs.
The process is, you know, I write a bunch of riffs, show them to JC, he arranges the ones he likes, usually, and then...
He's the one who decided, yeah...
Well, yeah, I've got to bounce it off somebody.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I write the riffs. I like them. But even to get to the point where I show JC, I would have come up with 10 other ones that he never hears. So here are the 5 that
I think
this
we
week
make it.
That are pretty good. And then he would be like, yeah, that one's great. Like, what was that again? Well, you know, I'll play this, play it there, and actually... Do that before you do this, and then repeat that at the end. And I go, okay. So we do a little kind of just quick recording, and we give it to Rich to hear, and then we go into the rehearsal room and we all play it out together, and then we start working on some semblance of a song. And that's usually how they're birthed. Sometimes when we're just screwing around, we'll come up with a song right on the spot. But most of the time, that's how those songs end up becoming songs. We can do that, or we can churn out 4 records a year, or we can do one every 10 years. I have no, when it comes to, I don't know, I'm weird like that. Like, I don't have to write a song for 10 years. I don't have that, like, oh, I gotta,
have to bring it out of you.
Yeah. It comes out in a different way. It's not. It's
you're
not
hitting like, all cliches. Yeah, that's not fun.
Yeah, it comes out in different ways. Like, I still feel like I need to constantly be creative, but it just doesn't need to be in one form. So I do a podcast. I write articles. So that keeps me busy on a creative level outside of the music. So honestly, it's not the songs, it's just the process. Creating something is definitely something I need to constantly do, but I don't need to do it in the form of albums and songs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. For this album, you worked again with Eric Ratz, mm-hmm. third time. Am I wrong?
Well, second time doing an album, but yeah, he's...
Love is Bold and Fire Music? Huh?
Yeah, he engineered that, yeah.
So he's well-known, Juno Award winner, whatever. What is its the added value? What, for example, what's the difference him compared to Matt DeMatteo?
It's kind of touchy to compare two different producers. They're both great, and they both have their own style. Matt is amazing at drums because he's a drummer. He can get amazing drum sounds. He has natural knack for it. He knows how to do it. And he's a great musician, composer himself. Like, he knows musical theory instinctually. So he's helped us a lot in the past. He's really done stuff. But with Eric, I really like Eric's guitar tones, you know? And he's had such great success with, you know, the Cancer Bats and Billy Talent, two different kinds of bands, but guitar-based. And since we've known Eric for so long, longer than we've known Matt, and Eric's really graduated from becoming an engineer to becoming a music producer, one of the most sought after in the country. And he is a rocker. At the end of the day, he's a rocker. So I trust his ear when it comes to trying to find rock sounds. He's great at that. And he was a great hang. And we didn't, you know, it's the first time in our career that we didn't change anything. From album to album, from the beginning to Fire Music, there was always one ingredient changed, whether it was the lineup, or the studio, or the producer, or both, or all three. There's always something different. There was no consistency. We're always trying to find. So when we find something that really works, Fire Music was really, I thought, was the best album we put out. It was a culmination of all our records in one album. Why change that? It's not broken. Like, this is the formula, guys. This was what works. Why change it? And Wildcat proves it, because I think we worked at the same studios, Revolution and Vespa, with the same producer, and the same lineup was constant. We were all getting along. We all knew how each other worked. So it yielded a very similar sounding record in terms of it being one of the better albums, if not the best album in the discography. So we're two for two. It's never happened. From Borderline to We Sweat Blood, different studio, same lineup, same producer, different studio. No, different producer, same lineup, different studio. We Sweat Blood to Sleep Is the Enemy, same lineup, same producer, different studio. From Sleep Is the Enemy to Never Too Loud, different producer, different studio, different lineup. From Never Too Loud to Below the Belt, it was same lineup, different producer, although it was an old producer, but it was different again, different studio. And then from Below the Belt to Rock and Roll is Black and Blue, same producer, different lineup, different studio. And then Fire Music is different producer, different lineup, different studio. Finally, on Wildcat, all the markers line up. Same producer, same lineup, same studio. So why break? Why fix anything?
And you have a good expectation. It might be the same magic trio for the next one.
Yeah,
like, same studio, same producer, same lineup? Question mark.
God, I hope so. You know, because it's just such an easy, very productive combination. Like, we walk in there, I'm not worried about shit. I don't have to spend an hour fucking calming this guy's ego down and fucking, you know, petting this guy's ego. I don't have to worry about that fucking stupid shit. Let's just get down to business, tell a few jokes, have a few laughs, and rock out. And just, like, high-five each other when we know we got what's in our head, you know? So those are great feelings. Why change that? I mean, fuck. it's such a crapshoot. Our whole history has been nothing but changes, right? So we know that side. Why would we change it now? We've done enough changes, you know?
So you mentioned it. One of the key elements for the band is the instability for the drummer. Seven, if I'm not wrong, in total.
It is seven on paper, but six, because one of them was our booking agent who booked those shows, who needed a drummer, and he drummed.
Simple question, why? I mean, you're the core with JT, obviously. Around this core, it seems to be, kind of, in 20 years' time, six different musicians?
Well, first of all, 20 years to be a band is a long time.
Yeah, sure.
For any band. Most bands break up after 4 or 5 years, right?
True.
No matter how much of a name band they become. And I hesitate to really divulge the real answer to that, because those people aren't here to defend themselves. But
it can be sometime, I don't know, in the long term you cannot go easily together, or people, they witness the fact that how it is to be on the road at the time.
The fact is that we've gone through the fact that we've had as many drummers as we have had looks like we are difficult to work with. But what a lot of people don't see behind the scenes is we've been working with the same label in Europe for coming on 16 years now. We've had the same sound man since 99. We use the same crew, and the only thing that changes is the fact that they have to keep working while we're off the road, so they go to another band, and then they keep touring, and then they come back. And so the crew, even though it's ever-changing, is never because there's never an official broken tie. They always eventually come back. We always work together. So
a lot of things are stable in the band?
Exactly. That a lot of people don't see, that makes, that would offset seven drummers. How would offset what seven drummers looks like. So I can't sit here and go, well, this is the reason why this guy left. The reason why that.
From the outside, you can understand that you're the core of the band, JT, and maybe the third one, which is the new one and not part of the core, can grow in frustration, because I'm not sure do you allow him space to fit in, or?
Well, absolutely. Rich Knox has been in this band for almost 4 years, and he was the one who started the single "Do You Want to Rock" on the last record. It was his drummer. He was the one who initiated that song. And here he is on his first album. We've never recorded a record with him, and he's pretty much the reason why that became a single. So Rich is also aware that, like, in this band, he's got a huge part in the creative process. And we've done nothing but give him. Like, people don't see this, but we've done nothing but give him the opportunity to do what he needs to do.
Okay.
But people don't see that, so it's like, I just gotta live with the fact that people think we're difficult.
So, that's about the end. I just have three short questions, just to have a better understanding of who you are in terms of what you like or don't like in terms of music. A least favorite song of your career?
Probably "Take Me Home," which was a single off "Never Too Loud."
All right. Imagine for the next record, you have a choice of a guest, dead or alive. Who would you choose?
Dead or alive?
Yeah.
Phil Lynott or Cliff Burton.
All right. Younger, I don't know, teenager, before, after, I don't know. What was the spark that lightened your whole thing?
Kiss was definitely the first band that I got into when I was six.
And that it's beautiful. I enjoy Kiss, a few songs, I would say. Like 50% of the rock metal artists I interview give me the answer. What is your favorite song from Kiss? I don't completely understand why Kiss such impact on everybody.
Well, because they were the first rock band I heard. I was 6 years old. You were very impressionable. Kiss made a huge dent in the people that make music now, because that's one of the first bands they heard when they were kids.
Kiss because it was very popular at that time and available on lots of radio shows. And
no, they weren't available on any radio shows. Nobody played them. But they got a lot of exposure on magazines and
So you are the young age. How did you?
So I'll tell you. When I'm 6 years old, you're very impressionable, and they were superheroes to me. They dressed like otherworldly people. So when you're 6 years old, you're in Superman and Batman. So these guys with loud guitars, and they presented themselves pretty wildly with long hair, and they looked wild. That's attractive to a kid. So a superhero with a guitar, that's how they presented themselves. I was an only child growing up, so Kiss wearing makeup, they looked like my cousins, and I pretended that they were my cousins. So there's a lot more going on underneath the surface than just like Kiss, because I like their logo, or because they put on makeup. For me, they represented so much, and they also marketed toys. There was also toys there. And so kids love the toys, and Unmasked is a comic book.
Nostalgia?
No, there's no nostalgia. Nostalgia is when you forget about something and you return to it. I've never stopped listening to Kiss. For me, I'm exactly as I was in grade 7 when I was listening to Double Platinum. I mean, I've never not listened to Kiss. I mean, I don't listen to them every day or every week or every month, but they're constantly in my radar, in my world, you know. So no, it's not a nostalgic thing.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Good
thing. No, people don't understand, but there's a lot more going on under the surface. I'm not just naming Kiss because they're like the only band I can think of. When I was 6 years old, my mom bought me Kiss Alive. And she told me that if I write a letter to the address on the back of Kiss Alive, that she'll mail it. So that's what I did. I wrote a letter to the Kiss Army. And I don't know if it was a week, I don't know if it was a month, I can't remember. But I got mail back from Kiss. And when you're 6 years old and you get mail when you're 6 years old, that's huge. And there was no money exchanged back then. I just wrote a letter. And I got 5 glossy 8x10s and 2 school book notebooks that open up that you can keep your school book.
That's the treasure of the...
And you got me as a fan for life. And I bought Kiss Alive. Well, my mom bought me Kiss Alive, and so I listened to that record constantly, 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 constantly. And as an impressionable six-year-old, you just end up liking it, no matter what. So that's embedded in my psyche since I was 6 years old. You can't compete with that.
Okay, I understand.
There's nothing that competes with that. So, you know, when I hear Deuce, when I hear Strutter, when I hear Hotter Than Hell, Firehouse, they're great rock songs, but there's something way more connected going on under the surface with those when it comes to me. And that's why I like Kiss.
Crystal clear. Thank you very much.